You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks, but also from Walnut Creek, California, because we have a special guest today.
Wow!
For the first time, we are doing, since we came back, doing a guest and first time over internet. Welcome to the podcast from the Dunked On Basketball podcast, Nate Duncan.
It's so much better of an interview than I usually give you, or so much better of an introduction, but I'm just glad I could bully my way onto this show.
Yes. So as we mentioned on this week's regularly scheduled episode, Nate and I were among a group that went out to dinner last Saturday at the Sloan Sports Conference in Boston. And a big part of our discussion was what we discussed on this week's regular Peltoncast episode, fast food rankings. And Nate requested there to be part of this episode.
So he bullied his way in. But so you got to hear our rankings earlier this week, and now we're going to hear Nate's rankings. And he's not counting down five, right?
I've got like a few tiers that I wanted to go through. I think Let's see how many are these in total. 12. I have 12 in total that really stood out to me as deserving of okay. fast food recognition that I've so enjoyed over the course of my life, much of which I spent rather poor and desperate for fast food.
You know, we were talking about this a little. I don't think this came up on the podcast, but the reason, like, this is such a universal thing, because people watch different types of TV, different types of movies, but everyone at some point eats fast food.
Yeah, except my stepfather.
This is one person completely unaware of fast food.
He's not too into it. Yeah. So I guess he's aware of it. He's aware of it. He just would not deign to try fast food.
That's what I was saying, is there are fast foods that I might not have eaten, but I'm aware of what they mean culturally. Like, I know what a KFC double down means. I haven't actually eaten it, but I'm familiar with what that is about.
And that is a vast oversight, my friend.
And by what it means.
I've actually never had one either, to be honest. But does that still exist even? Like, can I have
one
gone.
If I wanted to go? I think you can only get a Taco Bell taco with the chicken as the taco.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's right. It's it's that nice piece of breast right around the chicken spine that's just perfectly taco shaped.
I'm assuming this is going to be in your top tier.
So glad that Mother Nature could bless us with just this beautiful taco-shaped, naturally occurring piece of chicken that just fits right into what Taco Bell is trying to do.
But before we get to your top 10, which I want to get to fast because I'm excited, do you want to introduce yourself and your work for some of our listeners who might not be familiar, some of our hosts who might not be familiar?
Yeah, my work, at least as it's relevant to this podcast, is I have been eating fast food for a very long time.
Okay.
My father took us to McDonald's all the time. My parents divorced when I was young, and usually, you know, my dad was kind of scraping by after the divorce, so he would come up once a week to the town I lived in with my mom and take us out to what very often was a fast food dinner. My love for fast food began to be cultivated as I saw my dad put salt onto his McDonald's hamburgers.
Okay.
I don't think our mom does that, but I could see her doing it.
Yes. She's a formative in the room with us. This is this Pelton heavy podcast.
a formative moment in my life was when I wanted some ketchup for my McDonald's burger as I think a 6-year-old, and my dad forced me to go to the counter and order it myself. I was too scared to, and I started crying, but eventually I just wanted that ketchup so badly that I bucked up and did it. That was really, you know, I think very important for me to just, like, you know, the first step for me in becoming a man, perhaps.
Wow, you were developing grit in that moment.
See, we were never forced to do that, and that's why we hate talking to strangers.
Yes.
Nate, very good at talking to strangers. I think that's the key difference here.
And you know, I certainly have eaten plenty of fast food. I eat a lot of fast food. I always have. I still, even now, as I've become a real adult and obviously have appreciated more food, you know, going to college and then you know, actually living my life as a real person, having to go out on dates with actual women who are not really that interested in fast food, at least on a first date. But I still have maintained my love for it, and there's nothing like it. At times, there's a certain spot that that fast food scratches, and I think that'll always be the case.
See, this is impressive because Nate, I thought, coined a concept to me, which is one year when we were in Portland for the Hoop Summit, he talked about always considering the alternative cost of any meal he
ate. Oh, I've heard about this. Is your idea?
It's a yeah.
So. I've heard about this idea.
Yeah, yeah. It's I mean, you only, especially if you're traveling, you only have a certain number of meals that you can have, and but still, nonetheless, like sometimes you just need to eat crap, and I think that's, you know, one of the big things about fast food is that it's crap, and I think we just need to acknowledge that. And if I may move on, I wanted to take a little bit of issue not only with the Ringer's definition of fast food, but you guys as well. I actually have an even narrower construction of it than you guys. Yeah.
Okay. What is your definition of fast food?
All right. So there's a few things. I think this was actually mentioned on your initial show, but it's got to be a place with a drive-through or that could reasonably appear in the same building with a gas station. And then the second part is fast casual. Is out. It's fast casual. Everyone knows
even
that.
Even if
is.
It has so a drive-through, like if there's a Chipotle with a drive-through, that's out.
Well, I'd like to know where this beautiful Nirvana exists.
I can't say that I've been to one, but I've been to a Jimmy John's with a drive-through, and that's out.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you might. So well, let me get to the other components, and you can tell me whether okay. It's in or out. But as far as I'm concerned, no Chipotle, no Shake Shack. No Five Guys, even though those have perhaps somewhat similar types of food as some fast food restaurants, they are also too expensive. And that's what makes them fast casual. I think if you are really a fast food place, you're not going to have a menu item that's more expensive. It used to be $5, but with the devil that is inflation, probably I'll up it to about $6 now. So
no Chipotle item burrito, over $6.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, and I think all of the restaurants that I'm calling from here fit into there.
Doesn't McDonald's have burgers that are over $6 now? Like the Grand Mac, I felt like I glanced at the menu the one time I've been to McDonald's since then. I feel like that's over $6, isn't it?
I don't think so. Well, I've yet to try the Grand Mac locations. Actually. Well,
so it's different prices everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, non airport pricing.
Yeah.
Because they definitely jack the price on it up on you on an airport if you're in like one of those like downtown locations that doesn't have a drive through but yet, you know, has pays really high rent, so they'll like jack up the prices at those ones sometimes.
Well, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with your very rigid definition of what is considered fast food. But where do you stand on the Slurpee?
Of that being fast food?
Yes, because well, it's at a gas station.
I think. I don't know. I don't think it's food.
It's not, okay, so you're talking about just food items. Do desserts count?
Yeah, I think that's probably food. Yeah,
but Slurpees are not a.
Yeah, you're not gonna see any of those BS desserts on my list. But okay, yeah, you good. Know, you theoretically, if you know you're the type of person that wanted to include something that has no business on a list like that, it is technically food. It would qualify.
I'm so happy we're doing this. By the way,
no, did milk did milk at any fast food restaurant crack your list, Nate?
Yeah, the Happy Meal milk. No, unfortunately, did not make it. It's a bit too much of a commodity, I'm afraid. But and also not food. But also, a Slurpee. Yeah, I mean a 7-Eleven. I guess like that's fine. That's, you know, there are lots of those in a gas station. But you know, it might be pushing it, but it's really irrelevant, right? Like, I'm not like Bart Simpson and Milhouse Van Houten. Like, I don't enjoy drinking a Slurpee.
You don't enjoy drinking a Slurpee?
You're badly outvoted on this pod.
This was my number two fast food item. just the on a hot summer day. Look, I mean, you're in a place where it's hot almost all the time. You could have a Slurpee at any point. But in Seattle, we only get like 10 of those a year. And on all 10 of those, you need to drink a Slurpee listening to maybe The Chronic by Dr. Dre. It was referenced today that if this was for you, Kevin, it would be Ski-Lo.
Absolutely, yeah.
Driving around in Boulevard Park.
All right. Well, I think we're all entitled to our opinions. That's what makes this exercise so enjoyable.
Yes. Yes.
All right. I think enough.
should we get into it?
Yeah, the intro. Right. But yeah, let's get into the list.
All right. So one other caveat that I had as well is if you basically have like the same sandwich, like for example, a double cheeseburger and a single cheeseburger from the same restaurant, those are not two different sandwiches to me.
I agree. I agree with that.
Or if you're, or if you're putting like, I mean, the whole point of this is to recognize like different types of things. So to spoil it, In-N-Out double-double animal style is my number one, but I'm not going to also take up the other four top slots on the list with the single cheeseburger, the 3x3 animal style, not animal style. Like, you know, you're trying to just recognize it's the same patties. It's the same cheese, essentially the same bun. You know, I mean, I would say like for McDonald's, a Big Mac might be like different than a quarter pounder. To me, those are kind of different concepts.
But, there's a different flavor palette.
It's the general idea of the burger, though. Like, we're looking for the overall burger concept, not the individual burger. Basically, a double cheeseburger is just a cheeseburger with another patty.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. So let me explain to those people who have not been to an In-N-Out regularly, do not live on the West Coast, the revelation that is the In-N-Out burger. The first time I ever had it, same year as you, KP, it was in 2005. I went on a trip to LA. This was, spring break from law school. I was staying with a buddy there. There was one that was maybe like 10 minutes away near LAX where he lived. And I immediately ate there four straight days in a row.
Oh my God.
That's impressive.
Yeah, you're always competing.
So let me disabuse a few misconceptions here. Number one, In-N-Out destroys Shake Shack and Five Guys without even accounting for the fact that In-N-Out is like way cheaper than those two are as well. And price actually matters to me because I think, especially if you're at the point in your life where you're eating fast food, part of the reason that you're doing that is because it's cheap and that value proposition really it comes into play. So here's what's so good about In-N-Out. The burgers are cooked fresh to order, sometimes amazingly for like the thin patty fast food burgers is still like even like a little pink in the patties as well, which is awesome. The grilled onions are these little like small dots, so you don't get overwhelmed by too much grilled onion. As once when you get it animal style, if you get it regular, then they just have like a grilled onion in between the two patties, which also is genius, but I like the animal style too much. The pickles are by far, I think, my favorite pickles I've ever had anywhere. I never enjoyed pickles on a sandwich even until I had In-N-Out, and this introduced me to pickles. And feel free to break in at any time here, telling me how smart I am with all this. But
we're just
Okay. The bun is an absolute tour de force.
Tour de force.
Perfectly toasted every single time. You can even order it more toasted if you like. The level of customization is available. The service at In-N-Out, by the way,
impeccable is awesome. Service.
Everyone there is so happy. I was actually the guy I work with for my Twitter show at Twitter. We were just talking, like doing like an audio check, and so we were BSing around about like what our best, our favorite jobs were before what we're doing now. And he was like, "Oh, working in In-N-Out was the best. Like they're like." Everyone's so happy there. You get that enormous safety pin. The world's largest safety pin is probably on like the back of your apron. You're just happy. You can eat In-N-Out all the time. Somehow they make the service be so much less desultory and nice. And, you know, if you want something done special at most fast food places, you've got like a 50% chance of them just completely ignoring what you asked for. Whereas at In-N-Out, they get it right every single time. And they're like very happy about it.
Yeah, they like that you're ordering something different.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right. They like that you are really taking advantage of their restaurant. The tomatoes are usually, I think you guys would agree, one of the most suspect items on a fast food burger. Like, you know, you're getting like an orange tomato if you're lucky. Like, there's definitely, you know, not, I forget what the chemical is that makes tomatoes red. I should remember this, but or a mini there's not enough tomato, in it.
Right.
Yeah, or just not ripe. Yeah, or there's like the ones where they're kind of like worn out and like the skin is starting to detach from the outside of the tomato because it's kind of Don't worry, by the way, not all 12 of our going to take this long to discuss.
I could listen to you talking about it and double for hours. Just carry on.
Well, the other thing, too, is that as a result of this discussion, it's 10:51 p.m. Pacific time right now, and In-N-Out closes at 1, so we definitely need to finish up in time for me to go get one.
Okay. This will not be a three-hour podcast.
The Thousand Island-style sauce on the animal-style burger is fantastic. It's got plenty of relish in it. The Shake Shack kind of Thousand Island-style sauce, sort of the ketchup-mayonnaise mix, doesn't have any relish in it, nowhere near as much flavor, mm-hmm. destroys Shake Shack in that regard.
And you don't even consider that fast food.
Right. But still, you know, this is a debate between Shake Shack, Five Guys, and In-N-Out. And, you know, I think that wins it. And the Shake Shack sauce is, like, way too viscous as well. It just kind of melts and mix in with the burger the way you want to. Now, I did have a little bit of trepidation, though, that In-N-Out might not count because they're just kind of doing things differently than any other fast food. Like, if you go into an In-N-Out in the restaurant, like, it's probably going to take about 20 minutes for you to actually get your food. In the drive-thru, there's always a crazy long line, in part because it's so popular, but also in part because it takes quite a while. But when a double-double only costs $3.40, I think it's still fast food. Like, that's what saves it. It's incredible how cheap it is. So usually when I'll get it in and out, I will get one 3x3 animal style, three being the number of patties, and then the by three is the number of slices of cheese. Yes. You could do a 3x4 if you wanted to, if you're really feeling ambitious.
Where do they put the fourth slice on the bottom? You answered one of my questions for you, of which I have numerous.
Yeah. They would do exactly. Like, you would have four slices of cheese.
There's a cheese on the top and the bottom.
Right. So actually, maybe I should get that at 3x4 next time. But they have
some. You're talking about tonight already. Right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, the quality is always perfect too, right? Like, the cheese is always perfectly melted. You know, you go to another fast food place, sometimes they just slap it together and the patty isn't, it's not getting, the cheese isn't getting melted while it's actually being cooked, the way it is in In-N-Out. You get, like, the perfect level of the cheese congealing. It'll kind of mix in with the grilled onions as well. It's really outstanding. So I'll get the 3x3 animal style, no lettuce, and then a double-double animal style, no lettuce, and then also a side of that delicious spread, the Thousand Island style sauce.
All right. Saying that In-N-Out wouldn't hypothetically count, basically because it's too good, is like saying that the Warriors don't count playing basketball, right? Because they're playing basketball to a too high level.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, it's the fast part that is where it may kind of fall apart a little bit there. But I mean, considering how cheap it is, I think it has, and it's also, you know, they serve the same kind of food, as you said, but there is a cost in speed. Right. For how good they make it. And I think that, like, that has to be acknowledged.
Yes. How often, let's say that you're going to In-N-Out. Are you getting it animal style every time? Do you ever not order animal style?
I've never even had the non-animal style before.
Never?
Nope. I mean, the opportunity cost is too high. Like I said, we know that animal style is the best. I still don't get a chance to go there that often. So, you know what? I mean, like, I know that it's going to be good. There's a 0% chance that I'm going to like the other one better. So just go with the one that's better.
Yes.
I like that thinking.
What is the most patties that you've ever gotten? Because I've never gone beyond a double-double.
Just three. You notice that I get the 3x3 and the double-double.
Yes.
The 3x3 can actually get to be a little bit much in terms of, like, the bread-to-meat ratio. So then, you know, you got to wash it down with just the regular double-double because it can be a little much.
Okay. So we all had basically the same number one fast food item. And I think we can all agree that this is definitively the best fast food item.
We broke no
argument. Oh, no. It wasn't the Chick-fil-A waffle fries for you?
Chick-fil-A waffle fries.
I guess the other question I had, did you have anything else in this top tier, Nate?
No, I did not. I mean, now, if Chipotle actually counted as fast food, which it did for the Ringer, Chipotle burrito would be even, like, way higher than In-N-Out. But as I said, I don't think it's the same. You're in a different category. Yeah,
I think Chipotle burrito was maybe number three for me.
Yeah, Nate actually loves Chipotle burritos more than you do.
I don't. Okay. I mean, yes. If he's saying that it's way higher than In-N-Out, then he definitely loves Chipotle more than me. But have you ever had a quesarito? Where do you stand on the quesarito at Chipotle?
Yeah. I've had the quesarito before. Sometimes they'll kind of balk at making it a little bit. But yeah. I mean, what I do love about Chipotle too is not only will they customize it, but like if they, you can like have so much control of the ordering process. Like if they don't put enough of like a certain ingredient in, you can be like, hey, put a little more in there, please. Yeah. Like
literally my order every single time is I wait for them to finish and then ask for more sour cream. No matter how much sour cream was previously in there, I always want more. The thing that's happened with the quesarito. So I think originally with the quesarito, which I don't know how far we should get into this because apparently it's not a fast food item, which I'm skeptical about, but
you can still talk about
it. I mean, I can take a tangent to discuss Chipotle really as long as you'd like to be honest.
Okay, good. What they've started doing, when I originally had the quesarito, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, it would cost the same price as a burrito. Now it's the price of a cheese quesadilla and the price of a burrito. And it's just not worth it because I'd rather just have a cheese quesadilla and a burrito, which I've been known
to order.
Yeah,
the integrity. Oh, that's interesting. The integrity of the burrito shell can be a little difficult with the quesarito if they don't quite make it right. You know, it'll just like kind of break through a little bit. And I also just, the cheese isn't thick enough that I really gain that much. I had it a couple of times and I was like, you know, it's not really worth it for the extra cost. And like, I'd rather just get like some more meat or guac or something instead.
Yes.
I've still never done the quesarito. I feel like I do need to have it at one point just to say that I did at least.
Yes. I mean, part of the magic of Chipotle is the soft tortilla. And this changes it. It becomes a crunchy tortilla. And it's honestly, I would say that the quesarito is worse than a normal Chipotle burrito.
Okay.
You're just getting it for the novelty.
I could see that.
Yeah. Okay, so what about your tier two? If In-N-Out animal style, double-double, whatever it is, 3x3 animal style is your number one all alone on tier one. What about tier two?
So this one, and this is, these are not necessarily in order. I still am struggling to put this second tier in order.
You're going to want to work on that for most of your life.
Yeah. A very underrated item here, and probably the one that I have had more than anything else on this, is the McDonald's double cheeseburger.
And double cheeseburger, yes.
Clearly, it's not really that good, obviously. Like, but it also used to be, for most of my life, 99 cents.
Yes.
And is now like $1.39 or whatever it is. And I think it was $5.38 that said basically it's like the cheapest protein that you can get. And at times when I was like struggling, you know, working as a paralegal, like not making very much money, and I was just hungry and on my way home, I could get full for like $2.50 by getting two double cheeseburgers and still like enjoy my meal.
A double cheeseburger is still part of my default McDonald's order.
It would absolutely.
Be double cheeseburger, whatever, the four-piece McNuggets and then fries is probably my default.
I always get the nuggets because I want to get the barbecue sauce, then get a McChicken to dip in the barbecue sauce. Mm. But a double cheeseburger every time. I would never go to McDonald's if it weren't breakfast time and not get a double cheeseburger.
Yeah, but just like the value proposition is the biggest thing. Like there are clearly most things on this menu taste better, but it's very kind of pleasant. I really enjoy the little like dehydrated onions that they then rehydrate at the store. those little like small onions, those are pretty good. The pickle is pretty sorry. I will admit that. I'll take that off a lot of times. And another tactic that may now be obsolete with the new Grand Big Mac was I would actually order two double cheeseburgers and a Big Mac and then make the meat from one of the double cheeseburgers just be like half of the meat in the Big Mac. So I'd actually have four patties in the Big Mac because the normal Big Mac ratio is way off. There's way too much bread and not enough meat.
Really?
I think I told you that yesterday, didn't I?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I thought I did.
Wait, so can you explain to me how this works? You would
All right, so, you know, there's the two individual patties in the Big Mac. So I would take one of those patties and put it below that weird center bun.
Yeah.
And then I would take the two patties from the double cheeseburger, hopefully not get too much ketchup on there, and then just put that in between like the middle bun and the top bun. And so now you've got four patties on your Big Mac.
Nice.
You never even thought of that.
I like where you're going there. Could you ask for that from McDonald's? Do you feel like they do that?
No.
Yes, they might say yes. More, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they say yes, and then it's like, you know, you get it 50% of the time for one, and it like costs like double the amount of like a normal Big Mac, which is already like $4. So you're paying like $8 now for your for your like double Big Mac, essentially. But hopefully this grand Big Mac, I don't know what the pricing is on it, but I'm hoping that will alleviate these concerns a little bit.
Okay, what is next?
So this is a question I wanted to ask you guys. My pick here is the Wendy's double cheeseburger, which did not appear at all on the Ringer's list. Now it's now actually known as the Dave's double. Back when I was a lad, they had those square patties, which are pretty cool. It would stick out the side of the bun, and so you could just like get four bites of like just cheese and burger, just to sort of get started, because it was like the square patty was sticking out of the round bun. But they have reformulated now. Another problem was they only had one slice of cheese on their double cheeseburger, which was a big problem. You had to order an extra slice of cheese. But now they have kind of still have the square patties, but they are thicker and narrower, so they fit within the bun. But the thickness is good. You get one of the big problems that you get at most fast food burger places is, especially just the national chains, is the patty is just too dry. And you never have that problem at Wendy's for whatever reason. It's always like cooked pretty fresh, got a lot of moisture still in the patty. And they've also increased their pickle quality as well. Still nowhere near In-N-Out, but among the higher end pickles that you can get now at a normal fast food restaurant. The onions are pretty good. They give you the right amount. They'll put a little bit of mayonnaise on there as well for you, in addition to the mustard and ketchup. And the bun is solid also. So I think, and that to me, the question I had for you is, what is the best cheeseburger at a national burger chain? Like not just an In-N-Out or Five Guys, like something that actually is national. My pick would be the Wendy's double cheeseburger.
I mean, I would probably go with either the Big Mac or the Quarter Pounder. McDonald's, definitely the place I order those things the most. Wendy's, I'm like exclusively going off the dollar menu, or now the four for $4 deal.
So this is the the best national burger item. I think that's the question,
I think so. I mean, so you, KP, you would rather eat a Big Mac than like a Wendy's double cheeseburger?
I've literally never had it.
I mean, I've had the double stack. I think you should give it a shot. But a double cheeseburger.
The double stack is not, it's thinner. They don't put any like tomato, like their tomato is usually pretty decent too. They don't put any tomato or anything on it. Like this is, the double cheeseburger is a whole different animal than the double stack is. It is a little more expensive. I think it's like, it might even be like $5 now, but I happen to think it's worth it.
All right, Nate, what's next on your list?
Popeye's chicken, spicy. Pretty obvious. I think it's just some of the best fried chicken that's out there, even still. Even if you go to like these fancy fried chicken places, the quality of the breading is just fantastic. Like it's just sticks together in these huge swaths. All of the pieces are great. You get something different out of, I guess I don't really like the wings that much, but because you just don't get as much meat there. I'm more of a like a buffalo wings kind of guy, but the breast, the thigh, the leg, all of them, fantastic. Just, you know, can't go wrong with Popeye's chicken.
It's weird. We have a Popeye's near where Tristan is, but we almost never go there because of the fact that we have the local chain Azell's, and then the new real Azell's, which is Heaven Sent Fried Chicken, also in Renton. So that's kind of just the default anytime we're getting chicken.
There's a lot of options between Azell's, competing Azell's, and
Heaven Sent.
Well, Azell's, competing Azell's, yeah. And Popeye's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I don't go to Popeye's that often. For whatever reason, I guess there's the nearest one is like 8 miles away from my house. So, and it's kind of the opposite direction of the direction that I'm ever going. So I do need to go there more. Actually, my girlfriend has never had it before. I tried to convince her to get it actually when we were just driving back from Portland a couple of weeks ago. And she was not interested.
Maybe after she listens to
this. Most of this fast food conversation ends with the girlfriend was not interested.
She loves In-N-Out and McDonald's, though, so at least I can indulge a few of my vices.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Popeye's fried chicken is great. I was a little bit surprised even how well it fared. I felt like Popeye's and Chick-fil-A fared a little bit better in the Ringer list than I would have expected them to.
Yeah, you know, I think it's true because I just think that, like, burgers are superior to chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally, I like red meat. I mean, chicken is, like, flavorless inherently, right? Like it's got like a nice texture to it, but it doesn't have its own flavor. Anything that you're starting with, you're kind of trying to dress it up by breading it or putting sauce on it or whatever. So it's I think it's just generally not as good. But I also there's a little bit of a component for my list as well as just trying to reward the best examples of particular categories that I really enjoyed, even if, you know, I probably would have way more burgers from some of these other places than I would, you know, the next one on my list, a Chick-fil-A spicy chicken deluxe sandwich. But it's the best example of that category and I really enjoy it. So I felt that gave it a little bit of a boost than, you know, going with like the third best burger or something.
Mm-hmm. Have you had the spicy chicken? I don't think I have. I'm not a
never.
Spicy
I mean, guy. I've only been to Chick-fil-A one time,
right?
And I had what was more or less their like normal Chick-fil-A sandwich, right?
Yeah,
it's called something. I asked a friend of mine who went to college in Atlanta, and so I figured he was the foremost knowledge of Chick-fil-A that I knew. And I said, "What should I get at Chick-fil-A?" And he said, "Don't get fancy. They've gotten all crazy in recent years at Chick-fil-A." And he said, "Get the regular chicken sandwich with waffle fries." Honestly, I know this is a bit of a crazy take to a lot of people, but I would almost rather have just a fast food chicken sandwich than Chick-fil-A, just a Jack in the Box chicken sandwich.
That's going too far.
There was not enough chicken on the Chick-fil-A sandwich. It was mostly bread.
The chicken is very,
I
hate to use this word, but very moist.
Yeah.
I needed more. It's good.
Their breading is the best. Their breading is way better than like the Wendy's spicy chicken sandwich, for example. And I think, you know, for me, I like the spicy chicken deluxe because I like spicy number one, and I like pepper jack cheese number two, and I like tomatoes number three. It adds a nice little bit of extra moisture. And then I also get a side of their Chick-fil-A sauce, which is quite addicting.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Last one in this tier, the double steak burger with cheese at Steak and Shake. Probably not something that either of you guys have had, not being Midwesterners. I actually, growing up in Chicago, they didn't have one in Chicago. But when I go visit my aunt in Indiana, they got Steak and Shakes all over the place. 24 hours also for Steak and Shake is big. And it's interesting because if you go into the restaurant, it's actually like a sit down with like a waitress or a waiter. But if you go through the drive through, it's like a normal drive through. So I don't know why you'd want to wait longer for your food. So I would always just go through the drive through and go there at 2 a.m. and be very, very happy with myself. So the Steak and Shake, it's thinner patties, but they got a nice buttery bun and there's almost like a crispiness to the patties around the edges, but it's not like too dried out in the middle.
Now, Nate, here's the thing. I actually have been to Steak and Shake.
Yeah, they recently opened up a Steak and Shake in downtown Seattle within the last year.
Which is not where I went.
Whoa.
I went. Yeah, very odd. But I went when I was in Indianapolis working on a story, but it turned out it was during Lent and I gave up red meat that year for Lent. So it was a really horrible time to go to Steak and Shake. I had to get like a chicken sandwich there.
What's the point? And why did you even go?
I mean, it was obligatory.
The thing was, the Steak and Shake that they opened in Seattle, I think, is not like other Steak and Shakes. I was there with
like
my coworkers.
2,000 miles to the west of where they're headquartered.
Well, I was there with my coworkers, all of whom are from the Midwest, and they all swore that the Steak and Shakes in the Midwest were different than this one. It was basically like what I would describe as a bougie Steak and Shake. It didn't have the same integrity of Steak and Shake in the Midwest, which is more or less like a cheap burger joint.
Yeah, if it's in downtown Seattle, I could see that being an issue. I will say this about Steak and Shake, too. I didn't have any shakes in my – I'm more of a savory guy. I just – not really a huge fan of dessert. But if I had to pick the best shake from any chain, I think Steak and Shake would easily.
Really?
Yeah, it's got like actual ice cream in the shake. Imagine that.
Yeah.
I'm partial to the Neapolitan shake from In-N-Out.
That also, I consider that on my list.
On your top five?
Yeah.
Wow. To me, yeah, the Neapolitan shake is pretty much the perfect shake flavor.
The strawberry is so crappy in Neapolitan, though. Like, it's never like a good strawberry. There's no actual strawberries in it. It's just like, you know, dyed pink and like, it's, I don't know, not a fan. Mm. But wow. I mean, we used to get Neapolitan ice cream as a kid, and, you know, we would just eat all of the chocolate and vanilla and like barely touch the strawberry.
All right, so I want to third tier.
Yeah. Yes. This is the sides tier. I agree with Joe House on his podcast. I agree with Joe House on his podcast with Simmons that a side can't just, that's not why you're going there. You're not going there for the side, no. But they still are very important to the overall experience. And I had three items in this. The Popeyes biscuit is number one for me.
Yeah. No question.
So buttery.
Popeyes biscuit.
So buttery, so greasy. I mean, like, what other biscuit it has like the proper amount of moisture that you can just eat it completely by itself and not even have like your mouth start feeling dry at all, which, as you know, it can be a problem for me because I need my milk with certain food items.
Water doesn't do it for you. Book to keep your mouth
no
dry.
It doesn't, like, you need like some kind of like, you need some kind of like lipids in there as well to like help wash it down, I think.
I'm huge into milk also, by the way.
I think it's the only fast food podcast.
I've always been a pariah for my interest in milk. I'm happy that there's somebody else out there who's interested in milk.
I'm not uninterested in milk. I'm just less interested in milk at Fogo de Chao.
Okay. Okay, so the Popeyes biscuit, pretty much the perfect side. What else do you have on there?
McDonald's French fries. And the question I had for you, you guys talked about like how crispy they are. They actually help contribute to I took this water law class in law school at Arizona, and one of the like cases that we had was McDonald's in a farm that they were either like vertically integrated with somehow using up like too much. Maybe it wasn't a case. It was just like a book about it or something that they actually are like depleting the water table in like certain areas so that they can like water their potatoes more so that they're like the perfect length for their fries. Like I admire that level of commitment.
Okay. With the McDonald's fry, I've known two different kinds of people, and there are people who like the long kind of fatter fries, and there are people who like the short crispy fries. Where do you stand there?
Well, I think there's really even three kinds, and ooh, I like them all equally. The amount of variety is fantastic. I also like them. I think that they are great when they're hot and fresh, but then also as they like start to cool and like certain ones of them can get like a little soggier, I actually kind of enjoy that aspect of it as well. They'll be like that sogginess, but they'll also still have like some crisp on them at the same time. And the beauty of McDonald's fries, of course, is that they're thin, right? Like when you think of fries, like these thick fries that people like, potatoes, again, don't taste like anything, right? So where you're getting is you're putting salt on there, obviously. And then you've got the crisp around the outside. That's what makes it desirable. So if you decrease the surface area to interior ratio of the fry, now you've just got like more of this flavorless mush on the inside. And that's what McDonald's fries avoid. They're long, they're skinny, they're perfectly fried. There's a little bit of variety. I mean, I think if I had to pick, it's like those little tiny ones that I must just come from like, you know, the side angle of the potato or something, like one of the quadrants. Because they seem to be like a little bit curved, but yeah, those ones that are like 2 inches long in the bottom of the box and just like incredibly crispy. I mean, those are probably my favorite, but,
I'm with you.
Really, I mean, they've mastered the French fry. They really have.
I mean, steak fries are the thicker, fatter fries, right?
Yes.
They're more or less garbage.
Yes.
That's it. That makes me think of,
no, I agree. I mean, I would say even that McDonald's French fries are some of the few fries that I can enjoy without any kind of ketchup or any other kind of sauce. Like that is really the mark of a great fry.
Agreed.
Yeah. There's a local burger place in Seattle called Red Robin, and their thing is bottomless steak fries, which
it's a pretty national chain at this point. It started here.
But are they? Okay.
Is it bottomless because you never get to the bottom of the container because they're not good?
But the thing is, I'm always getting, I want every single side. They also advertise, they have bottomless steak fries, and they'll also give you various types of like ranch barbecue sauces and things like that, because they know that nobody is eating those fries on their own. True. You need to drench them in sauce to make them palatable. And what is third in your...
I think you're right. Another thing that really got no love at all from the Ringer, the McDonald's hash browns. Is that something that you guys, you know, is even like on you guys' radar screen to be on a list like this?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Again, it's just the reason I like it. It's crispy all around the outside. Somehow it's like made up of these like little tiny potato bits that also have like their own unique texture. It's totally different from the fries, but I don't know what McDonald's does with potato products, but it's incredible. Another thing that you just can eat it. It's greasy enough that you don't really need to have any ketchup or anything like that. So it's just the perfect accoutrement to breakfast.
Totally agree. My child, Baby Fantasy Genius, they have an item in Seattle called, it's a Blitz box. There's the Hawk box and the Blitz box, which is the breakfast box. And he always wants to get that more or less every Saturday morning because it comes with four McDonald's hash browns. And he wants to eat all four of those McDonald's hash browns.
I respect that commitment.
And that's what we think of as hash browns as children, right? Like when people start making hash browns that are like actual shredded potatoes that you're frying, that's complete garbage. Like I know what a hash brown is, and it is an oval patty that is fried all the way through with the smallest amount of potato that you could possibly get inside of there.
I completely agree.
They perfected the hash brown.
I'm a little disappointed that McDonald's has not upped the ante on the KFC Double Down by creating a breakfast sandwich with, instead of bread, hash browns on the outside.
I would definitely eat that.
And so I guess we should move on to breakfast. Two items in this tier. Sausage McMuffin with egg, not the egg McMuffin. Canadian bacon, not that good. Also too thin. You need the sausage that can have enough flavor, enough substantiality to counteract the poached egg, which is genius, by the way. But that could be strong. You get some of those bites that have like the yolk in it. You need something like the sausage. It's got a nice spice in it. It's thicker than the Canadian bacon that can really hold up to that, the intensity of that egg yolk in the sausage McMuffin. And then the way that they crisp up the English muffin on the outside and toasted is always, every once in a while you'll get some, it'll be over toasted and like kind of black on the outside. That's no good. But if you get the right one, it's really quite fantastic.
Yep.
So do you guys agree with me on the sausage McMuffin, or are you more egg McMuffin?
I don't eat sausage is the problem. And especially I learned that my body cannot digest sausage because of McDonald's breakfast. I used to think, I was like, man, sometimes my stomach just hurts on Sundays. And I really thought it was correlated to the day of the week.
Because you were scared of going to school the next day?
Maybe. It was like, I'm so upset about having to have gone to church beforehand and so upset about going to school the next day. Like Sundays are terrible when you're a kid, but it's because we would go to McDonald's almost every Sunday and I would get some sort of sausage item and my stomach would hurt all day. So I've basically retired from sausage, and particularly the McDonald's sausage patty, no matter how great it may taste.
Apparently you should compete harder at digesting.
Yeah, I'd love to know that, like, what it is in the McDonald's sausage burrito. I guess it's probably, the answer is not really that much sausage.
No. Delicious.
Is what enables you to not have that much of it. So my last one is the Burger King croissant-wich. The story of my relationship with the croissant-wich is a bit complicated. Of course, I was introduced, like the rest of an innocent nation, to the croissant-wich through the comedy stylings of Dan Cortez.
I've forgotten about this.
Who was the initial Burger King croissant-wich endorser. And you know, great. He had a great turn on Seinfeld as a Mimbo, and just, you know, he was at a time when I wasn't as cool as anybody. He was cooler than everybody, and that made me try the Chris sandwich.
I had never once equated the croissant sandwich with Dan Cortez, but Dan Cortez had an aspirational personality to somebody who grew up, was a child in the early 90s.
No, I mean, like when I was like 13 years old and watching, like he was like on MTV at one point, right? Like, isn't that sort of like,
oh, yeah.
And Rock and Jock.
Yeah. So
that's
like
more or less where I know Dan Cortez from. Yeah. I don't know what he did after that.
Yeah. I mean, in like the summer of 1993, when I was like sitting at home, like writing down my own stats while playing Tecmo Bowl, every once in a while I would turn on like MTV Spring Break and just be like, I'm never going to be this cool to be on Spring Break with all these people. And Dan Cortez was the man making 13-year-old Nate Duncan feel completely inadequate about himself. And in response, I went and ate the breakfast sandwich that he endorsed many times.
Yes. It's a pretty good breakfast sandwich, though, right? I mean, really, anything that is comes between a croissant is great.
Well, for a time, it was amazing. It really revolutionized it. Having a croissant, you know, was something that, like, no other fast food restaurant had. And then, probably about 6 or 7 years into its run, I remember I was in on a road trip in Dodge City, Kansas, and, and we'd gotten up at like 6 in the morning. You know, about 8 o'clock, we rolled in. I got a croissant sandwich at the local Burger King establishment, and I found, in my dismay, that they had reduced the quality of the croissant. No flakiness at all. It basically was just like, it, like if there were a way to just like take a normal piece of bread and like paint it to look like a croissant, like that's what they were doing at that time.
I think that might have been just the location in Kansas that you were at. Croissants might have been too foreign for the people of Kansas.
You know, I had a few, a couple more like in airports over the years, and it continued to be really bad. And then I think within the last 5 years, they have actually improved the quality of the croissant again. And so it's really, it's back up there for me. I will freely admit that the egg quality on the croissant is like pretty subpar. I think they do that sort of like folded over thing that's like kind of supposed to be an omelet, but it's just like kind of plasticky. But especially if you can also go for like the double croissant sandwich, in which you get more sausage on there. And that really kind of drowns out the egg and, you know, just the other problem is the egg is like kind of too thick on its own, too. That's why you need the extra sausage, because you just get these like bites that are all egg and the egg isn't that good. But, you know, now it's right back up there. Not quite sausage McMuffin with egg levels, but still very enjoyable.
Okay, so while we're on the breakfast tier, I have a couple McDonald's breakfast questions for you, because McDonald's basically is the king of breakfast fast food, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And that is, do you remember they used to have bagel breakfast sandwiches?
Which, I remember this.
Yes, I ate those pretty regularly. I would get the steak one with grilled onions. It was sort of like the steak was kind of similar to like a Philly cheesesteak that hasn't been chopped up yet. It was sort of like, you remember what I'm talking about? And they had like this kind of weird sauce on it that was like halfway between like mayonnaise and really bad hollandaise. It was pretty good.
It was a great
sauce. The bagels. Yeah. They put just like a crap load of pepper on it for some reason, which was a little bit of a negative. And then the bagel itself was, you know, nothing, of course, even approximating a real bagel, but, you know, just slightly thicker and chewier than like, you know, your normal outside of a breakfast sandwich. So, you know, I'm not surprised that those met their demise, but, you know, I would, especially when I was going to school, if I would like stayed up all night studying, sometimes I would like go there like before the test and like get that breakfast sandwich.
It was almost like that was the only shot for bagel breakfast sandwiches in fast food that ever happened. And every other fast food place saw that failed. And they're like, all right, bagels. People don't like bagels. It's like the world's out
of it. I think Dunkin' Donuts has one.
So, I would eat that. We don't really have Dunkin' Donuts in Seattle.
You know, we used to have one in Burien. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it closed in 2002. I looked it up online earlier tonight.
You were 11 years old. No. okay, also, the other question I have about McDonald's breakfast is, where do you stand on the McGriddle? Because I'm pretty out on the McGriddle.
Yeah, I've never been that much of a fan of it. In some ways, it just doesn't go far enough as far as making it. Because it's basically supposed to be like a pancake on the outside, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I also found the fact that there was just like an M, like the McDonald's M, like emblazoned on the top of the pancake to be like slightly... Like, are they branding this pancake?
It
like,
makes you feel bad about yourself when you see that. You're like, why am I eating this food?
I think it's too hard. That, to me, is the issue with the McGriddle.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point. But the problem is just that it would be, like, it would fall apart. It'd be too flaky if it weren't. If so I think you're McDonald's just...
pancake.
Yeah, I appreciate the idea. I was certainly very eager to try it when it first came out. But it just didn't quite do it for me. I'm just the sausage McMuffin with egg pretty much every time at McDonald's.
Wow. I'm a sausage burrito guy at McDonald's. I mean, to me, they're so cheap, right? They have traditionally cost a dollar. I think because of inflation, they're up to like $1.29. But I could get upwards of 4 sausage burritos. And then you get those with hot sauce. And that's a good breakfast that you're having right there.
I always felt that and I haven't had it very many times because as you guys know, when I have my favorite items, I like to stick with those. But
yes.
The tortilla quality I thought was just trash.
The tortilla quality isn't great. The thing that really gets me is the
I demand more for my $1.20.
It's about the melted cheese on the inside of the McDonald's breakfast burrito. It's almost a flavor of melted cheese that you're not getting at any other place. Unless you were to melt... What's the super cheap cheese that people put on, like...
Like the Kraft
single? American cheese.
It's like a Kraft single melted inside of a burrito. And it's an amazing flavor.
I'll give it a shot next time just for you. And
okay, yeah.
I'll have one
bite. We'll
do
like a follow-up, like then... 65-minute podcast just about this.
I mean, what's going to happen is I'm going to have one bite of it. It's not going to be good. I'm going to throw it away because it only costs $1.29, so I won't feel bad about it.
Just throw it right out the window.
I'll be able to tell you with a straight face that I tried it, and then I'll go back to my delicious egg McMuffin or sausage McMuffin with egg and hash browns. I will say the sausage McMuffin with egg is like pretty clunky to say, though.
It is, yes. That's the biggest issue.
I don't know if I've ever met a single person who is so committed to sausage McMuffin with egg.
Like, what is that? Like 6 syllables? Like, we don't need that many.
I guess I'm more straight sausage McMuffin. I usually don't even get the egg.
You're the, because there's a.
How about just sausage egg McMuffin? How about that? Why couldn't they just do that?
It's like basically the same thing.
I guess because the sausage McMuffin is its own thing.
Also, where do you stand on the plural of quarter pounder?
quarters pounder?
that's
what it's like attorneys general.
Yes, exactly. But it definitely can't be quarter pounder with cheeses.
That's what I.
Yeah.
All right. I think when we've gotten into the plural jokes, it's just probably a sign that we've spent too long.
Is there another tier? Or is that it? Are we done at the breakfast tier?
Where would crusty, partially gelatinated, non-dairy gum-based beverages fall on the list of fast food items for you guys?
I feel like I'm missing that reference.
Yeah, you are. That's the scene in The Simpsons where like they're talking about McDonald's and it's like McDonald's. I've never heard of that. They call it a quarter pounder. Like, it turns out they have 2,000 locations in this state alone. I demand that you leave that in though, because even though you guys didn't get the joke,
oh of course,
hopefully
we don't cut anything out. Like, we have no standards on this podcast.
Yeah, we make Dunked On look highly edited.
Our listener demands it.
You didn't earlier plug your own podcast when Tristan gave you the opportunity. So you want to do that?
I kind of like that you gave your credentials just in eating fast food. It almost made me think to myself that this divorce that your parents went through was one of the most important moments in your life. It was like, I'm so thankful for this divorce to have happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was 1 year old, so I was like, you know.
Oh, you're not even emotionally damaged, probably.
Yeah, I think, you know, as shown by the fact I just spent an hour and 20 minutes discussing fast food rankings, I think it's pretty clear what a well-adjusted person I've truly become.
It was like 55 minutes tops.
I have a basketball podcast that's a daily podcast that KP has been awesome on it many a time, and I'm glad I could return the favor by coming on to his show, but it was pretty much like an NBA nerd daily basketball podcast. So that's what I do when I'm not shoving fast food into my maw.
that's what allows you to keep shoving fast food in there. We appreciate you taking the time and coming on, and maybe we'll have to do this again either before or after
you've had a sausage burrito.
No, before or after we hang out in Portland for the Hoop Summit and talk about the Portland food scene.
Yeah, it's not quite as gleeful for me to talk about food that's like actually good though. Like I think like there's just not the level of comedy. You're just sort of like, all right, it's just, yeah, that was fantastic. Like, there's just nothing to say, like, beyond that. Whereas, like, here you can really, like, dig into it. Because especially because everyone's had all these things, too, like right. You were saying. That's, like, what makes it so universal.
It's ubiquitous.
We managed to talk about Portland food a lot.
Yeah, that's never stopped.
Yeah. But nobody cares, but we talk about it in shocking amount.
All right, well, thanks again for the time.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure, guys.
All right. Hope you all enjoyed another extended segment about fast food. Thanks again to Nate Duncan for joining us.
Now we can't record a podcast that's less than an hour.
No, we really can't. Just Tristan and I now to briefly tag on to this with some thoughts about Markelle Fultz not playing against USC in the Pac-12 tournament. No, that's not actually it. But his college career effectively over, it sounds like, after that announcement on Tuesday.
Wait, what? We're talking about that?
But more importantly, okay. A report Tuesday that Adrian Peterson is interested in playing for the Seahawks.
Oh, it's more not just a report that Adrian Peterson is interested in playing for the Seahawks. It's that there's mutual interest.
Wait, is that the report necessarily? I don't think that has been clearly reported. Now, so his father did an interview with Chris Tomasin of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and he implied that the Patriots were not interested, despite the fact that Adrian Peterson was interested in playing for them. And he didn't say that same thing about the Seahawks and the Raiders. So that's why it does seem like there's mutual interest. But people probably jump in the gun a little bit in their conclusions and rumors. And I'm not downplaying this just because of the fact that we were so pessimistic about the idea of the Seahawks going after Adrian Peterson.
Well, I think there were a couple of things that we were pessimistic about. It was not just that Adrian Peterson would want to play for the Seahawks. It's basically three-pronged.
Three-pronged?
It's that Adrian Peterson would want to play for the Seahawks, the Seahawks would be interested in Adrian Peterson, and the market would bear out that he was able to come to the Seahawks at a small enough number that it would make sense for them, which seems to be the case at this point.
Yeah, the speculation from Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, who speculated first off that he thought the Raiders were the first option for Peterson, then the Seahawks were the second option, also speculated on Twitter that he thinks a deal with the Seahawks or the Patriots would be likely around $2 to $3 million a year with heavy incentives. I'm assuming that's on top of the $2 to $3 million, not is part of that $2 to $3 million. Is that price low enough that you're okay with the idea of going after Adrian Peterson?
That's a complicated question. Because the thing that you have to factor in for Adrian Peterson is it's not just about is Adrian Peterson a running back who is able to give you the production that he once gave you. But the real question is, are you comfortable with the idea of the Seahawks changing what they do offensively?
And so you're talking about the fact that Peterson has throughout his career been much more comfortable running out of a quarterback under center as opposed to out of the shotgun?
That, but also having a player that, look, irrelevant of what they're paying Adrian Peterson, he is somebody who you need to give the ball to. You don't put Adrian Peterson in there and give him 8 carries.
I mean, you do if you're just going to cut him midseason, like all free agent veteran free agent. No, I'm joking.
He's Adrian effing Peterson. It was almost like, you remember when Marshawn Lynch came back for the playoff game against Minnesota? And it was
he did not come back for the playoff game against Minnesota. He came back for the playoff game against Carolina.
He was there for the second playoff game, but not the first. But it's like, at that point, Marshawn Lynch was almost a nuisance to the team because the offense was running so well that adding in a player who's not just going to be, is Marshawn Lynch the open man? Is Marshawn Lynch the best possible option in this case? And he wasn't, right? There was a time when he was, but if you add in somebody to the offense who you have to give so many touches to, right?
Marshawn Lynch had 6 carries in that game against Carolina. Now, granted, that's largely because the Seahawks were down, I believe it was 21-0 at kickoff.
The first play of the game, they threw an interception and were down 21-0.
Yeah, it's really remarkable how that happened. But what a great comeback.
But you understand what I'm saying here, right?
Yes.
You basically have to change the Seahawks offense, because the Seahawks offense is not about feeding. And they went through this with Jimmy Graham also. They went through this with Percy Harvin. It's not about finding one player and saying, we are going to change everything we do to make sure that this one player is involved in the offense.
Now, I guess the difference you could say, I don't think that Darrell Bevell, I guess he probably did overlap with Percy Harvin a little bit in Minnesota. I'd have to look that up to be sure. But the reason that a key reason that Peterson is reportedly interested in the Seahawks is because of his experience playing for Darrell Bevell in Minnesota, who was the offensive coordinator the first 4 years of his NFL career, during which Peterson averaged 4.8 yards per carry, 94.8 yards per game, was a Pro Bowler all 4 years, offensive rookie of the year, and first team All-Pro in 2008 and 2009. Which obviously, to be clear, Adrian Peterson at age 32 is not that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where, look, I'm sure Adrian Peterson is a very smart person, but he's confusing correlation with causation.
In terms of Darrell Bevell being there?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's just crediting that. I think it's more that there's a comfort level. He felt like, in his dad's quote to Chris Tomasin was, those are some pretty good years. I mean, look, he also ran for 2,000 yards without Darrell Bevell. I don't think he feels he was successful because of Darrell Bevell.
Okay.
There's a comfort level.
Darrell Bevell is a different coordinator than he was then, right? He's working with a very different quarterback now. I was going to say it also happened to overlap with having 4 shitty quarterbacks. But I'm pretty sure Brett Favre
was in there. Yeah.
Yeah, Brett Favre probably had at least one solid season during that time period.
The other quote from Adrian Peterson's dad was, quote, he wants to try to win a Super Bowl. And at the end of the day, if that's what he thinks he needs to do to attain his goal, whether it's New England or the Vikings or Oakland, he really did not mention Seattle in this one, he'd be totally open at that time.
Okay. I mean, New England, the thing is, I look at all of these other destinations and I'm like, that makes sense. New England, that totally makes sense, right?
Right.
Look, you get rid of LeGarrette Blount and replace him with Adrian Peterson. New England has lived off of ancient running backs, right? Oakland. Yeah. Oakland makes sense. Latavius Murray is
I think he'd be an amazing fit in Oakland. I actually think that's by far the most logical.
Oakland,
that offensive line, their passing game, the fact that they have a lot of cap space and can afford to pay him more money, I think that's probably where he ends up. And he might still go back to Minnesota.
Sure.
Yeah, they've just kind of been waiting for the market to play out. I think there's a real possibility that they step in once this gets serious with one of these teams.
Sure. But, I mean, that makes sense. I don't know if it makes sense for Oakland. Basically, any team... running backs are not that valuable. That's what we just have to assess. Running backs are not that valuable, and older running backs...
$2 to $3 million is not that much.
Yes.
The issue...
And the guaranteed money is not going to be that much
also. The issue with Peterson is, like you say, how he fits in stylistically and the fact that he takes a roster spot. That's the more coveted asset that Adrian Peterson takes up, not the salary cap.
There are roster spots available, whatever.
But not for running backs. I mean, there are roster spots available, but you're going to have to cut a young running back to keep Adrian Peterson.
Yes.
That's probably my biggest issue with this. We should briefly touch a little deeper on the stylistic issue. Over the course of his career, according to ESPN's Kevin Seifert, nearly 95% of Adrian Peterson's carries have come out of the shotgun. Last year, doing the math...
Out of the shotgun?
Or out of the... from under center. Not out of the shotgun. Doing the math last year, using stats from @PyroStag on Twitter, about 40...
That's my boy.
about 46% of the Seahawks runs came out of the shotgun. So obviously a very different style. Bill Barnwell, friend of the pod, did point out that before he came to Seattle, about 90% of Marshawn Lynch's carries were under center, and then he obviously was able to change his style when the Seahawks went to the read option.
But how Marshawn Lynch was 24 years old when he came to Seattle.
That's a very valid point.
Marshawn Lynch was, and he wasn't a superstar. You know, Adrian Peterson is an ancient running back, all things considered. And you're asking him to do something that he hasn't done in his entire career. Do I think that Adrian Peterson can run the ball out of the shotgun? Of course, right?
Right.
I don't think that Adrian Peterson will be a bad running back for the Seahawks. I'm not against it from that perspective. The thing that I'm against is the idea of just feeling like you need to give him the ball no matter what the defense looks like.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we'll see how this plays out. Maybe an emergency pod if he does end up signing, because it's not every day that the Seahawks sign a future Hall of Fame running back.
Are you wrapping things up?
Well, we do you have anything else to say about Adrian Peterson?
The thing that I want to say is that, honestly, like we talked about how basically every time we say not much is going to happen, the Seahawks go out and get a player who is of like some sort of notable talent, right?
Yes.
And that's the thing that seems to be, the Seahawks are looking for players. I'm going to say all across the board, both offensively and defensively. Defensively, they've been able to find them through the draft.
Offensively, and just re-sign them.
They're looking for players who are exceptional in some sort of way. Right?
I guess here's how I think about it, is with the exception of a couple of guys they've re-signed internally, your Jermaine Curses and Jeremy Lanes, the Seahawks either want to pay a lot of money or very little money to every position.
Which this, I don't think this changes that. I'm talking more like they're looking for what you would call in basketball, like unicorns, right? Like Percy Harvin is a talent that is not seen every day.
That's
There's
true.
Not a Percy Harvin every draft. There's probably one Percy Harvin every 3 to 4 years. Jimmy Graham, they're not Jimmy Grahams every single year, right?
Yeah.
These are players who the Seahawks are willing to sacrifice a lot of assets for.
They're not Kevin Kings every year.
I mean, I would much rather, if we were talking about the Seahawks having drafted Kevin King, I'd be much more excited about that than Adrian Peterson. But
which is kind of crazy. As you pointed out at one point when we were chatting about this on Twitter as soon as the news broke, like what a scenario where who would have imagined at any point we'd be like, oh, the Seahawks might get Adrian Peterson? That's kind of a bummer.
But the real question is, how much crow do I have to eat?
A lot of crow. I mean, I was dismissive of the idea, but not nearly as dismissive as you were. And especially you were dismissive over the idea that Adrian Peterson's market could get so low that it would be reasonable to sign him.
Yeah. The thing was, you know what, we were talking about that. Like, if there are people who want to defend me, you don't have to defend me. Because I wasn't dismissive.
Who's trying to defend you?
I was. No one ever. Not even my family members. But I was dismissive of the idea, not of whether it would work football-wise, but of whether it would happen at all. Yeah. And now we're on the precipice of this happening.
Yeah, which is why you need to eat crow either way, even if it doesn't happen.
Yes. Yes. Even if it doesn't happen, even if the Seahawks sign Adrian Peterson and it doesn't work out, I still should have realized that the Seahawks are always looking for players like Adrian Peterson.
They're always competing. I hear there's a place in Ballard that makes a delicious crow burger.
Have you heard about this? No.
Yeah, I completely made that up. That's okay. Of course, it's a ridiculous thing.
You said it so seriously.
I know. I'm good. We will probably learn more about this in the next couple of days as the legal tampering period concludes.
I love the term legal tampering period.
Everyone loves that.
I'm sorry to Bill Barnwell. I have no idea what I'm talking about. Like, the Seahawks are going to sign Andrew Whitworth, every single high-priced free agent, and Adrian Peterson.
That'd be great. That would be awesome. But yes, and then free agency begins in earnest on, what is that, Thursday the 9th, I believe?
That seems about right.
All right. We should probably look that up and make sure that we actually get the date right. I still haven't looked up when the women's basketball selection show is. I may never find that information.
We'll never know.
But the other bit of Seahawks news on Tuesday, the news that they have non-tendered Brock Coyle and Deshaun Shedd, who now both become unrestricted free agents. Do you have any thoughts on this? You seem to have no thoughts.
I mean, what would my thoughts be? Like, Deshaun Shedd might come back, but it's probably going to be injured the entire season.
I think it's highly likely that Deshaun Shedd comes back, just at a lower number than the tender would have been, and then we'll see what happens with Brock Coyle. And clearly not a priority for the Seahawks. Then some other reporting on possible for the Seahawks. Players they have been linked to so far in terms of free agents: offensive lineman DJ Fluker, who was waived by the Chargers yesterday; Brian Schwenke, was a backup in Tennessee previously. Both of those guys kind of interior linemen, who would probably be more depth in competition than coming.
DJ Fluker starting at right tackle next year, though.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the scenario, although I think the assumption is he's more effective at guard than tackle. And then wide receiver Kamar Aiken, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens.
I like Kamar Aiken.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a place to see.
Exactly. It's like, should they spend money at wide receiver? Obviously not.
And then defensive lineman Terrell McLean, about whom I can't say I know anything.
Nope. So. But he's supposed to be a Tony McDaniel replacement. It was like they're looking, that was the thought that I had, is like they're looking for unicorns at certain positions. And then on the defensive line, they're just looking for guys.
Well, you know, I think the fact that they're generally looking for run stuffers, like it's a market inefficiency because so few teams are looking for 4-3 defensive tackles who primarily stuff the run and don't really penetrate in terms of, you know, providing pass pressure. So, yeah, the free agency does begin Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. So that's
and it seems like we should know information about Adrian Peterson soon.
Yeah, it sounded like he was probably, you know, the original report, I think the original report, I don't know if the, which report that was, suggested next couple of days here, we'll know a lot more. So, again, stay tuned, and if any news breaks...
report back on how crow tastes next week.
And if any news breaks, we will be sure to break in with a special edition of the Pelton Cast.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.